episode of the SASMA podcast. Today we are joined by two very knowledgeable guests who will help discuss an extremely important topic relating to athletes' health. Dr. Marcel Juister and Dr. Carolette Klutter are both sport and exercise physicians based at SEMLI, the Sport and Exercise Medicine Lifestyle Institute in Pretoria, South Africa, under the leadership of Prof. Martin Schwellness, who you should all know very well. Carolette completed her PhD by specifically looking at the COVID virus and athlete performance and return to sport, while Marcel is currently focused on his PhD in other areas of respiratory health and areas relating to a multitude of different viruses. So I'm very excited to discuss this topic with them today. Good morning, Marcel and Carolette.
Morning, Carl.
Morning.
Thanks for having us. Thanks for the invite.
Thank you for joining us and giving of your time. I think a good place to start would be just kind of giving us a bit of an approach to a scenario and an experience that we're all having in our daily clinics or practices at the moment, where, you know, for one, I'll give an example of a patient, a 25-year-old athlete who they're currently preparing for their half marathon this weekend, but they're experiencing symptoms of cough, rhinorrhea, and congestion, as well as a sore throat. How should a sport and exercise medicine clinician approach this?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and answer this one, Carl. I think it's such a relevant question, something that I think most of your listeners have been or will be exposed to a situation like this. Essentially, Carl, what we want to do is we want to try establish what the severity of this infection is, and whether the symptoms that the athlete is experiencing are as a result of an infection or potentially non-infectious cause, such as a flare-up of their allergies. So essentially the first step what I would do is really establishing what symptoms besides the ones that you described the patient is having. This helps us to get an idea of the severity of this potential acute respiratory infection. So asking specifically about whether they're having any systemic symptoms such as fever or myalgia, fatigue or malaise, and then trying to go in a little bit deeper into the potential lower respiratory symptoms, because you mentioned cough. Now, we know cough can be as a result of just irritation from upper respiratory symptoms such as a postnasal drip, but it could also be a symptom of a lower respiratory tract infection. So I would also then ask a little bit further about whether this athlete is experiencing any shortness of breath or chest tightness or any chest pain. The next step, and hopefully you are having a physical consultation with this patient and not assessing them online, but the next step would be then to assess them and look for clinical signs potentially indicating whether there is systemic involvement. So, for example, looking at their resting heart rate and their temperature, seeing if there's any indication that there's potentially a more severe infection, as well as doing a thorough physical examination to assess for any potential systemic involvement. The next step, Carl, to help me with my decision is I would decide whether, according to the severity that I think this infection that this patient has, whether it's necessary to do any further special investigations. For example, in our more severe infections, we may decide to look for inflammatory markers such as CRP, or potentially, if you're really worried, you could contemplate assessing any other multi-organ involvement if there are signs and symptoms which are leading you along this path. But essentially, in this athlete, it sounds, if these are the only symptoms that they have, it sounds that it's a relatively mild infection. So based on my assessment like this, we then move to the next step, which would be advice with this to this patient, because essentially he wants to know, can he run this weekend or not? So the advice that I'm explaining now is actually very well put out in a International Olympic Committee consensus statement on acute respiratory infections and illness, which was published in 2022 in the British Journal of Sports Medicine, which was led by Prof. Schwellness. and various other co-authors. But essentially, step one is, as I just described, is assessing the severity of this potential acute respiratory infection. And then step two, from there, if this patient or athlete does not have any concerning signs or symptoms, which could be indicating a more severe infection, is that you then suggest this patient has a trial of exercise. Because essentially, Carl, what we want to know is how is his or her body going to respond or react to the additional stimulus or stress of exercise. Okay, the body is already fighting an infection, and now how is it going to tolerate this additional stress? And that is going to determine whether, you know, this athlete is going to be ready to participate in something like a high to moderate intensity exercise, such as a half marathon. So with regards to the exercise challenge test, as they phrase it in the consensus statement, is essentially you give the advice, you ask this athlete to go and perform exercise at about 60 to 70% of his normal intensity for about 10 to 15 minutes. So essentially it's almost like doing a warm-up to your normal session. Then, Carl, what's important is that this athlete then assesses how they feel during this 10 to 15 minutes, to observe whether they develop any new or worsening of their symptoms. If this is the case, it indicates that the body is not tolerating this additional stress of exercise well, and the advice then is to rest for another day and to try this tomorrow. Okay. If they tolerate that first 10 to 15 minutes well, they can continue to perform their session, but I would still recommend them to keep it at low intensity and about half the duration of what a normal session would be. So essentially what we want to do is we want to slowly progress the duration and intensity of this athlete's exercise to see that he tolerates increasing levels of intensity up until the day of his marathon or half marathon.
That's amazing. Yeah, I think you've really touched on a few really important concepts. I think number one is being familiar with the current IOC consensus guidelines in trying to make and support these decisions. Getting familiar with obviously the severity classification, but also I think being familiar with the checklists that, you know, both athletes or the physicians themselves can go through with the athlete in you know, making the decision of whether the athlete can exercise or can compete accordingly.
Carl, that is such an important point that you're making. And, you know, that checklist is such a handy thing for us as clinicians to be very familiar with, but also to share and educate our patients with. Because we know that many of the, although they are rare, the complications associated with exercising with acute respiratory infections or other illnesses for that sake often develop during the return to sport process. Okay, so what I mean by that is they actually feel all right, you know, when you're seeing them and assessing them, but during their return to training and as they're increasing the intensity, that's when the danger or the potential danger is for them to develop worsening symptoms or, you know, worsening of their illness. So this education is key about reminding our athletes or patients to really assess how they are feeling during this process of getting back to essentially full performance or their previous level of participation.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and as you say, I think, again, is the education's key is really going through those complications with them. You know, it's not to scare them, but also just for them to understand the importance of doing it properly and safely for us to want them to perform at their best level.
Exactly.
So, I mean, you also made a little bit of mention in terms of the investigations, you know, that one can do when dealing with these type of athletes. I think one question a physician would consider is, you know, should we be considering swabbing each athlete to see what pathogen they're carrying, especially if it's an infectious respiratory illness? And then would this change our management or approach to their return to sport or their ability to train or perform?
Yeah, Carl, this is a good question, and I think it's well debated at the moment, or it's a hot topic, because I think, you know, we are privileged that multiplex point of care testing is becoming more and more available and affordable these days. So, you know, we have this opportunity to do a nasopharyngeal swab, which helps us to identify the pathogen, whether it's viral or bacterial. Carl, whether we should be doing this for all infections, I think the answer is no. You know, at this point in time, we do not have there's no evidence or data to guide us on specifically which pathogens, lead to a prolonged return to training or return to sport process. That is part of the research that we are doing, that I'm busy doing with my PhD. We're looking at whether what the influence of pathogen-specific infections are with regards to these return to sport parameters. But I would say that there are potentially times when it could be useful to know the pathogen. Potentially, you know, in our more severe type in infections, if we are suspecting, you know, influenza-like illness, then it could be helpful, firstly, from a treatment perspective. We know that there are certain antiviral medications, our neuraminidase inhibitors like oseltamivir, which is useful in influenza, which can help speed up recovery and improve symptoms. Can also help reduce the transmission among team members if we are dealing with an athlete who is part of a team environment. So I think there is value to knowing the pathogen, specifically in a team sport environment. Certain pathogens we know remain infectious or are transmissible for longer than other ones, so therefore it is perhaps useful to know. But in terms of guiding our immediate return to training guidelines, I don't think it's as useful yet, because as Carolette may share later, we now know that what she found in some of her PhD papers is certain symptoms or the number of symptoms that an athlete experiences during the acute phase of the infection is highly predictive of the time that it will take for them to return to training and return to their full level of participation. And so I think we can gain enough information on our history and clinical examination to determine the severity of the illness to help us guide with those return to training decisions without having to rely on the pathogen.
I so agree with Marcel, and I think the one thing that we maybe also remember is I think it's very expensive to swab, and I think that's probably the biggest reason why we can't do it on everybody. It's impractical. But within the team setting, as he said, it's so important. I think what's also important is like what is this athlete going to compete in? So for me, I'll have a lower threshold if the resources are there to swap somebody that's going to participate in the Olympics very soon, regarding somebody maybe as a pre-season. If we don't look at severity, and we just need to know about management. And the other thing I think we have to keep in mind, if we maybe have an athlete with underlying chronic diseases like asthma, and they usually complicate a bit quicker after a respiratory infection, that might also lower your threshold. But definitely it's impractical and not needed in everyone, as Marcel rightly said.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you highlighted a good thing there, is also being familiar with your patient or your athlete's medical history. For example, as you said, the asthmatic or, you know, an elderly or someone with a higher risk of a more severe respiratory infection might lead us to go along a different route in their management as well.
Definitely. I think it always boils down to, but know your athletes.
Exactly. So, I mean, you know, while you make mention of it, I think, you know, with the upcoming Paris Olympics, you know, around the corner, I think let's go on to, you know, how should a sport and exercise medicine physician prepare to combat respiratory illness, but also treat it as one of the most common illnesses experienced by athletes in competition?
I think, like everything in medicine, prevention is better than cure. I just found that after the COVID pandemic, it's quite hard for people to comply by wearing masks. But if we just go back to basics and say in the lead up to the games, there are so many people ill at the moment, so really just try and stay away out of social gatherings and really minimize your risk within the social contact context. And then when these athletes fly in, it's long haul flights, they're at the airport, it's congested areas. So we go back to like COVID times, and we actually saw in papers being published on the incidence of respiratory infections in COVID versus other games pre-COVID, that there was such a small number of athletes being affected by respiratory infections. And it's probably due to the very stringent preventative measures that we had. So I would suggest to these athletes like you, wear your mask at all times, hand sanitize. We even now put out something for them to add Neseptin or Bactroban nasal cream and Elix in the throat before masking up. And then in the lead up, the few days before, taking your probiotics at least 2 weeks before. And this is all also based on literature out there, taking probiotics that's safe regarding water for 2 weeks before you fly. And then whenever you're in a congested area, good ventilation, going back, as I mentioned, to COVID times in preventative measures. Then say, for instance, somebody do get off the plane, and we very often get that somebody has been on this long-haul flight, very tired, then it's got a bit of a sniffy nose. Really to know where you're flying to and what the possible pollutants would be and environment we're flying from winter to summer. So we might have a lot of nasal irritation and allergic reactions. And what I like what Marcel also said is like also differentiate, is it like allergic or infective, but like try and combat the allergies that an allergy-prone athlete might encounter by really buffering them with the intranasal corticosteroids and the anti-allergic meds, that we kind of try and mitigate the risk of developing those kind of symptoms, which might make it difficult to know whether it's infective or allergies. So really, again, educating the athlete to say, listen, let's keep your asthma well controlled. Let's keep your allergic rhinitis well controlled, that we just kind of really decrease the risk of having any of those symptoms there. And then once we are on the other side, we carry on with our preventative measures. We can also advise on vitamin D supplementation. And then if somebody does get ill, the only thing really in literature, again, going back to the IOC consensus, is to say you can use your vitamin C, increase your dose of vitamin C and take zinc, 75 milligrams per day to decrease the time of symptoms duration. And then it's like really isolating the athlete as well, taking them away from the others if we don't have a spread of viruses or infections within the village. So I hope that answers your question, a bit of a preventative measures that we are actually putting in place as we speak.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'll just ask you to expand a little bit in terms of, I think you mentioned the vitamin supplementation, the probiotic supplementation, things that they can use on airplanes. But, how long before, for example, now pre-competition, should we be using any medication as prophylaxis with current, competition coming up and high-intensity competition in terms of the Olympics coming up to prevent, obviously respiratory illness, but I guess overall illness, I guess, in terms of athletes overall in the village?
Yeah, 100%. So I think we must maybe just go, sometimes we're talking about medications here and supplementations. So usually we would say to people, especially with the probiotics, 2 weeks. But I think we should not forget about the load, recovery, sleep. Those are sometimes basics we neglect pre-travel. Now, if you speak to these athletes, there's so much on their shoulders. It's a big game. It's a lot of – and yesterday I spoke to an athlete that's already having the difficulty in falling asleep. So I think when we want to combat infections, we also have to go back to the basics and say, how does my athlete sleep? Should I intervene now? How are they handling the stress? Because we know all stress, we know that stress can, limit, decrease our immunity. Again, load, it's been found that increased training load will make you more prone to having infections. So that's where you kind of work with the coaches as well and say you're in a high pressure environment before the game. There's a lot of psychological stress. There's high training loads for some of these coaches still because they're only participating now at the end of the games. There's sleep disturbances, and really go back to these common everyday things that we sometimes take for granted and say, how can we build up immunity in this time? to really try and buffer our athletes against infections. And then the other thing is, like, way before you're talking about timelines is vaccinations, having, you know, adequate vaccination time, 5 to 7 weeks for your seasonal influenza, so that we can kind of guide our athletes through vaccinating in time as well. Yeah, and then hopefully really get them on board with having these preventative measures in place and getting the coaches on board as well. It's kind of a team effort.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think, again, it's the importance of being very familiar with the WADA guideline in terms of anything that we're using or prescribing, to not run into trouble for these athletes going into these major competitions.
100%. Yeah.
I mean, maybe you want to kind of touch on, I mean, your work of your PhD in terms of, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic that we had. You know, what would you say or advise athletes diagnosed with COVID or suspected COVID? How would you go about investigating and managing them? Would it be also any different in terms of any of the other viruses?
Yeah, I think I'll just to put that in perspective, the study that I've done was on athletes that had the initial the ancestral virus and the beta and delta waves. And you can recall those were, you know, viruses that presented with quite severe symptoms. So I think with the modern COVID viruses, what I found might not be that relevant in detail because we work with completely different variants. But what we have found, and this is hopefully where Marcel's data will also really, you know, add to that, is that we just spoke about the fact that we cannot swap everybody. It's not financially feasible. It's not practical. But what we looked at is like looking at symptoms. So we divided symptoms up in 26 different symptoms, and we looked at nose and throat as the one group, chest and neck, and then systemic or whole body symptoms with quite a few symptoms under each category. And we grouped them together and say, how will the symptoms that you present with affect when you can start training again? And the main message that we got was that if you present with systemic symptoms, which would involve, for example, excessive fatigue, myalgia, fever, chills, nausea, vomiting, loss of appetite, those kind of systemic symptoms, if you have any of those symptoms, your chances to go back to train, you might have prolonged return to training. And what we mean by that is your first exercise session after your infection, that period might be prolonged. While whether you just had a nose and throat, like a little bit of a snuffy nose, a bit of a runny nose or hoarseness or a bit of a sore throat, that time period might be much shorter. So the days between illness and you starting to train might be a shorter duration. So what we hope to say is just by actually taking a thorough history from an athlete at the end of the day, we can just by the symptoms that they present with have an idea of when they will be able to start training and when they can exercise. And then what's very important then is, and that's where the IOC consensus comes in, although we have these guidelines, as Marcel also said, the real deal comes in when an athlete actually puts that body under pressure again during exercise. And how do they respond to that then? So that's the main message that I got from my COVID studies, was just to say, let's look out maybe a bit more cautiously to athletes with systemic symptoms, and then also athletes with chest and neck symptoms. So that would be your wheezing, your shortness of breath, your chest pain, and severe coughs. And let's just keep a closer eye on them and maybe have a lower threshold to really, you have to examine them very well in any case, but a lower threshold for some special investigations. And then also the total number of symptoms. If we add all these symptoms together, it almost sounds kind of logical to say the more symptoms they have, the more ill you are, and therefore the longer you will take to training. But it's actually, we could scientifically prove it and say the more symptoms you have, the longer you're going to take to return to training. And then really hopeful that Marcel's study will see if it still holds.
Thank you. And I mean, thank you for both of your insights into that. I think, you know, maybe as a last point for today would be maybe what each of you can just touch on, a bit of a takeaway tip or insight for a sport and exercise medicine physician or someone working in the sport and exercise medicine field in dealing with respiratory illness.
Carl, I think for me what I've learned is two things. Firstly, to get back to the basics of really having a good understanding of what your patient is explaining and experiencing in terms of their symptoms. As Carol had explained, we can we really can get a good indication of the severity of an illness by asking specific questions regarding the symptoms. And then the second, probably the vital point for me, is the importance of continuing to monitor our patients or athletes as they return to sport. And as I said, a lot of these complications, although they are rare, the ones that do develop maybe two or three or four sessions into getting back to training, you know. And if we then aren't still in touch or in contact with our patients or athletes, that's often when, if there's a lack of communication, they're not aware of the potential complications, they try to push through these initial symptoms and thinking, oh, I'm just so unfit, let me push through it. But that's when the danger arises. So I think really keeping a close eye on our athletes while they're returning to back to full training, for me, is a vital take-home message.
Yeah, Carl, I think for me, you 100%. And I think what's important as well is to let these athletes know that we're talking about symptoms. We're talking about when you go back to training, please tell me whether you have palpitations or chest pain. These are all symptoms being reported by an athlete. It's not something that I can physically check for or validate. And I would usually tell the athlete, listen, I need your buy-in into this, because what we go on is what you tell me, and I need you to be honest about this. And I think it's also important to involve coaches with this, to let them know, listen, we put your athlete back, but it doesn't mean that you can just go and train at full capacity. And we are monitoring him. And this is a step process. Like as you can do the first step, we're going to increase your load. And it's something that the coaches has to buy in as well, so that they completely on board with a gradual return to training that an athlete will go through after a acute respiratory infection.
Great, thank you. I mean, that was extremely helpful. And I think this has really been such an informative and valuable discussion that I think all health professionals involved in the sport and exercise medicine field will benefit from. Carolette, I mean, obviously good luck with your upcoming travels with Team SA to Paris for the upcoming Olympics. And I think to the fellow listeners, look out for, you know, Marcel's research and PhD in validating a lot of this and where we're going from here, but also being familiar with the current research and guidelines through the IOC consensus, as well as all other work that Carolette did and other fellow colleagues have been doing in terms of respiratory health. And lastly, I think we hopefully will all look forward to our upcoming SASMA conference in October, where more of these types of discussions can take place. And I look forward to seeing you guys there.
Definitely, Carl. We're looking forward to that. And I just want to say thank you to you and the rest of the team behind this podcast. I think it's a fantastic way of just sharing knowledge and sharing experience and growing the field of sport and exercise medicine in South Africa. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Carl. And looking forward to meeting everybody in person again in SASMA.